Hey, everybody, welcome to the latest edition of the Land O'Lakers podcast here on the Believe Podcast Network. Brian Kamenetsky, Andy Kamenetsky, and man alive, do we have some news and some things to talk about this week, Andy?
Yeah, big development for the Lakers. Should note, it's not as bad, this development that we're going to break down from about 100 different vantage points, as it could be. Yet it is definitely going to be something big and hanging over the Lakers for at least the next few weeks.
Yeah, okay, we're talking about Anthony Davis. All right, the cat's out of the bag. This is about Anthony Davis. So we'll break all that down just from the injury, what it means for the Lakers going forward. We'll also talk about some things that are not Anthony Davis related, but are a little bit worrisome for the Lakers. And Blake Griffin is on the buyout market, trade market, or whatever you do with somebody like Blake Griffin, who makes a lot of money and is difficult to trade. And so we'll talk a little bit about that before we're done. Before we do that, though, want to remind you that the Land O'Lakers podcast here on the Believe Podcast Network, brought to you as always by betonline.ag. Football, Andy, is over, but the NBA, college basketball, the NHL, they're all in full swing. The place you should be betting on those sports is betonline.ag. BetOnline even covers the awards, TV shows, reality TV. I know you are somebody who loves to gamble on the Golden Globes. Can't stop.
Absolutely. I love a good Golden Globe 7-award parlay.
Yep. It's the only thing that keeps your hands from shaking. Mm-hmm. BetOnline has hundreds of props with real-time odds on almost anything that you can imagine. That word was almost, by the way. And of course, the 24-hour online casino. Head on to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. That's betonline.ag. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
As always, too, the Land O'Lakers podcast brought to you by the folks at Delicious Pizza. Two locations, West Adams and Hollywood. 20% off if you use the password Cam Brothers. We indulged in some of that this weekend.
Yes, we used our own passcode this weekend.
Yes, we did. It was pretty cool. Name-checking ourselves and saving money
feel
in the process.
Like it's both a flex and I always also feel like a little bit of a dick.
No, it's not. We're bringing in business, man. The business just happens to be ourselves.
Us, right?
Probably wasn't a smart move to say this, given that the sponsor from Delicious is an avid listener of this podcast. But again, 20% off with the passcode CAMBROTHERS for delivery or pickup. Support local business. Support the local business of a massive Laker fan who, again, is likely on to us right now.
I don't mean that other people shouldn't use it. I just mean I feel a little bit awkward, like I'm walking in. Why, yes, I am Brian Kamenetsky of the podcast. And yes, here I am for my discount. I feel a little bit jerky about it.
Okay, that says something different about you than me, because I just use the password and I don't announce who I am.
Well, I know, but like, you know, they see the credit. Are you Brian Kamenetsky of the Land O'Lakers podcast? It has happened where I've gone in there like, are you one of the Kamenetsky brothers? And I say, yes.
That's different. But I'm sure that has happened, but I feel like that's independent of the actual password. But again, Delicious Pizza, 20% off. Use the password Cam Brothers, two locations, West Adams and Hollywood.
All right. So Anthony Davis, the news breaks on Monday. Fortunately, it was just the news that broke and not his Achilles. The MRI that was taken in Minnesota, presumably out of network. This is how seriously the Lakers are taking this. Is strain, they're calling it, a re-aggravation of this Achilles tendinosis. Bottom line is no structural damage to the Achilles tendon.
For those, by the way, looking to understand tendinosis better, I highly recommend re-listening to the last podcast where I broke it down very thoroughly and clinically using all the stuff I found at the top of a Google search. So
yeah, no,
if you're not clear on what's going with AD, pause, go back an episode, yes, then rejoin us, because you'll understand everything like 1,000 times better. You're welcome.
You're basically an MD at that point. Once you've listened, you're pretty well qualified.
No, I mean, you repeat enough shit that an actual MD says, that you basically become
a doctor. What's the difference? Aggregators. we're aggregating medicine. So the bottom line is AD is almost certainly not going to play. The Lakers said they'll reevaluate him when he gets back to L.A. He'll have another check from another doctor, probably another MRI, Woj reporting. And it's widely reported now they'll take a look at him in 2 to 3 weeks, almost certainly isn't going to play until after the All-Star break, which puts it around March 10th, I believe, is when that would be done.
Yeah, and even then, we don't know exactly when that's going to kick off because we don't know the schedule for the Lakers after the All-Star break. But you're looking at, like you said, around mid-ish March that I think you could even realistically expect him to be back. So,
right. So call it a month. And so the news certainly could be better. Better news would be, oh, he's fine. He can play in Minnesota and all the other 9 games that have got left before the break. But bad news would have been, you know, an injury of, you know, 2 or 3 or 4 months, something that puts him out, requires surgery. So all things being equal, it's not so terrible. But it does raise a ton of questions. And the Lakers are, you know, since they put this LeBron and AD team together, are in some uncharted waters because AD more or less played last year. LeBron was healthy. These guys didn't suffer any kind of long-term major injuries where they play long stretches without either guy. The first question that comes up is who starts in place of AD. It has been typically Kyle Kuzma, Andy, who has stepped into that role when either LeBron or Davis doesn't play. I would expect that to be what Vogel does starting in Minnesota on Monday or Tuesday night, I should say. Are you anticipating something different?
I'm anticipating that Kuzma would end up starting. I mean, he's just having a really good season. He's actually played really well of late. And, you know,
and performed well in that role when he steps into the lineup for one of those guys.
Yeah. I mean, he's just having a really good season. We've talked a lot about that over the course of the season. Mm-hmm. I think you could make an argument if you were looking to play Kuzma just off the bench, you know, just with however minutes you want, but you just feel like you want him to have the majority of those minutes with that second unit to provide that punch. I think you could make an argument for starting Wes Matthews because the offense, which we're going to get into at greater length during the show, needs more spacing in general, like especially if they're going to start resembling more of what we've seen with LeBron in full on I'm the sun and all the planets revolve around me mode, like whether driving and dishing or operating from the post. And Wes has been among the few guys who's been reasonably good hitting outside shots over the last 7 to 10 games. And as I've talked about before, Brian, he tends to shoot a better percentage the more shots that he takes. And LeBron is better at finding open men than anybody on this team. So I think you could make a reasonable argument for Wes. I think you could also make an argument that is more devil's advocate, but just functional. I could understand it for starting Markieff Morris, just because you keep the rotation the way we've seen it largely intact and just play Kuzma more minutes. It's the least attractive of the options, especially because Keith hasn't really been playing that well, but I don't think it's an insane option. So I thought I'd throw it out.
Yeah. I mean, that seems, I mean, it's one of those deals where if you are, you could either look at it as, because it's going to be at least 9 games. I mean, that is not official,
but the expectation.
It's the expectation. You can look at this one of two ways. Like Keith, you could argue makes more sense to start as in a spot start where you know it's going to be one night. It's the second night of a back to back. You're resting someone, and you just want to keep the rotation intact for one day. This is one of those deals where it's going to be 3 weeks. And so you can establish a new one. They already have a template for starting Kuzma and what the rotation looks like when Davis doesn't play, because there have been enough of those games. I just thought of this when you were talking about the potential for starting Matthews. What about starting Matthews for KCP? Like, is there a point at which KCP moves out of the starting lineup because he is in such a bad slump? And he really is. I mean, this is part of the spacing problems that you talk about and part of the outside shooting problems that we're going to get into over the course of the show is because KCP has completely cratered from 3-point range.
There's a logic to that. I would hesitate just because we've seen that KCP plays so much better with LeBron. Like, you know, that's been, you know, especially going back to last season, granted a lot of that had to do with LeBron and AD, but I feel like that's really where KCP has thrived the most. And also too, given that his confidence at times can be affected. And during, you know, during this stretch where, as you noted, Brian, the he's been in a slump, he's starting to actually take fewer threes. So I would be, you know, not many, but like, you know, one or few, you know, one or more fewer. And for a guy like him, that's noticeable. I would hesitate with anything that might mess with his confidence a bit, but
yeah, that's fair.
But it's not a crazy suggestion, just because, like you said, he is in a wicked, wicked slump right now.
Yeah. I mean, if you go back to, you know, he had that game against the Bucks where when the Lakers won, in Milwaukee on the 21st of January, where he went 7 of 10, he was sort of the story really coming out of that game. Hit, you know, took 10 shots, all 3-pointers, hit 7 of them. Since then, he has had, I'm just counting on his game log, 1, 2, 3 games where he was above 33%. And to your point, Andy, in all of those games, 1 of 2 against Philly, so small sample, 3 of 6 against Atlanta, more volume, 1 of 2 against Memphis. So, yeah, you know, the you know, his minutes are down a little bit, but the attempts are down as well, at 30% in February from 3-point range. And, you know, he shot 46% in January, despite only making 3 3-pointers in their last 5 games of the month. So he's been part of the reason they haven't been doing particularly well from the outside. I agree with you that they'll end up starting Kuz. I think it's the West thing is interesting. He's going to play more now. That's sort of a given. So at the very least, he's going to end up kind of back in the rotation, doing more things. He already was, and you'll see a little bit more Morris. The bigger fallout here, and I'm curious what you think, is what it means for LeBron. You know, other guys in the rotation will step up. Kuzma can soak up minutes. Keith can soak up minutes, whatever. The amount of work that's going to end up on LeBron's plate now is significantly larger. And one of the great things about the first 3 weeks of the season, the first month of the season for the Lakers, was how little work LeBron really needed to do for them to win. How they handle these next 3 weeks ahead of the break, I think, could be really significant just in terms of managing LeBron.
Yeah, you and I were joking around a bit offline last night while we were waiting to figure out as much as we could about the situation with AD. And, you know, I was saying to you, I would really respect if this situation with AD was actually just this, basically like a long game con for him to get out of the All-Star game. Like, you know, he's just been setting up this very elaborate scheme to make it seem like he's got this Achilles issue in order to get out of this All-Star game that no star wants to be playing in, especially stars that went all the way to the finals last year and had the shortest turnaround. That being the case too,
LeBron's like pissed that AD thought of it first.
Yeah, but I would, you know,
God damn it.
I would love to see LeBron turn around and just be like, oh, ankle.
No, I think the last game they play is against the Kings. Third quarter, you're up, Mayo, hopefully by a few points against the. Oh, my arm!
Yeah, exactly. The Caddyshack. Oh, but you know what? You know what? Might as well do it like 4 games before the All-Star break. 5. Where the Lakers are in the standings by the time that AD is finally back isn't nearly as important as, like you said, the after effects of it. LeBron has made a big point of insisting, Brian, that he is not tired ever.
But
he has been going out of his way to make it known that, despite, like we had said, this quick turnaround, despite the mileage that he's accumulated, which is just insane, you know, despite his age, all of that, that he doesn't get tired. He looks tired. Like the last 5 or 6 games, LeBron, he still has the ability to take over, but yep. You're seeing moments where he is very inattentive, particularly on defense. He's, I think, settling a lot with outside shots. His outside shot, by the way, it's kind of, this is very ironic in a lot of ways, it's kind of fallen under the radar because there's so much talk about why he's the clubhouse leader for MVP. His outside shooting has actually fallen off a lot, like the last 5 to 10 games. Like pretty dramatic. It's pretty right, but I'm just saying, like, another sign that he may be tired. Mm-hmm. Like that's for sure. That's the reason I bring it up. So look, there's going to be a big onus for guys like Kuzma, for guys like Montrezl Harrell, for Dennis Schroeder, who we're going to talk about later in the show at greater length. These guys who have the talent base to, if not take games over, put more of a specific stamp on these games, there's going to be a big time onus on these guys to make sure that it's just not LeBron carrying their asses for 3 weeks. Because if that's the case,
and for the Lakers to avoid, if it is LeBron carrying their asses for 3 weeks, avoid leaning on that too much. Like, sorry, you know, if we means we lose a couple games, you're not playing 42 minutes tonight. You're just not.
Okay. Well, it would be very helpful in terms of the whole, what you're putting on LeBron's plate, if they would start reversing the formula of coming out, you know, cold and sluggish and at times looking sort of disinterested.
Then you mean building, stop falling behind by 19 right. in the first quarter?
Then they end up in the second half turning it on and putting teams away. Start out hot, put these teams away, and then maybe give LeBron more leeway to actually sit in the fourth quarter and reduce his minutes.
Yeah.
But either way, I mean, a lot of what you're talking about, Brian, like that toll that could really be increased on LeBron is going to be more dependent on the other guys around him than LeBron or Frank Vogel.
Well, yes, I think that's absolutely true. And how many shots guys hit and you know, where the scoring slack gets picked up and all that. But like, look, I mean, the temptation is going to be there. They, you know, it's Tuesday in Minnesota, but after that, you see the Brooklyn game is Thursday. And now KD may not be playing in that, but it's still, and even without AD, it's still a big marquee game. You have the finals rematch against the Heat, who now have most of their roster back. Then the Wizards, who suck. But still have Beal and Westbrook. I mean, it's still a game you have to watch out for. Utah, Portland, Golden State, Suns, Sacramento. And then that's the All-Star. I mean, like there are some losable games in that stretch, some marquee games that even had AD been around. And so the temptation is going to be to try to, you know, win it. You know, obviously you understand what I'm getting at. Like there's going to be a temptation to kind of step up because these are marquee games, you know, Dame Lillard and, you know, Chris Paul and Devin Booker and all, like there's a lot going on here. The Lakers are going to have to avoid it. But you mentioned Dennis Schroeder. To me, he's the one. If you have to pick one guy, like I'm pretty sure I know what Kuz is going to do without, without AD in the lineup. When it comes to who can lighten LeBron's load, who can take some of that burden away? Last year, would you have said, okay, let's put the ball in Rondo's hands a little bit more, let him orchestrate a little bit more of the offense, give LeBron a few more possessions every game, even when he's on the floor, to not have to do as much. Well, this year, that guy is Schroeder. And you know, he has been very good at times. He's struggled a lot in January, seemed to get it back together, has had a couple mediocre games. But like, this is a moment where he needs to be good, not just as a scoring threat, but as somebody who can run the offense in a competent way and give LeBron a few possessions off.
Yeah, I mean, look, we've talked about this many times where I think his greater value for this team would be demonstrated more with him coming off the bench. And I feel like in a lot of ways they aren't getting as much of an effect from Schroeder in his current role as they would with him, you know, playing the majority of those minutes off the bench and still potentially closing games. That may change now. Mm-hmm. With Anthony Davis not there and, you know, more being needed from that starting unit. And I think from there, the reason I bring this up with Schroeder is we may start getting just more of an idea of what he really can do with this team, period. Because, like, the idea, you've talked about this before, and I think you're correct that a lot of what Schroeder represents in that first unit and brings to the table is just the ability to let LeBron take certain possessions off. And
well, that's in some ways, but yeah, finish your thought.
And that's meaningful. I think that definitely is meaningful. Like, you know, the idea of having either a secondary or at times a primary playmaker, even with LeBron on the floor, you know, that type of scoring threat. Like he always represents that and at times acts on it.
You know, but right. He opens up the floor because you have to respect his ability to drive and finish at the rim. It makes it's one fewer pair of eyes that can always be on LeBron. Because if you don't pay attention to Schroeder, he's going to shred you, catching and moving to the basket.
Absolutely. And that matters. Like, there's value in that. Mm-hmm. But I think there's been as much of that this season for Schroeder as a theoretical than it's actually been in terms of tangible on-court impact. And which isn't even to say that Schroeder has been bad. That's not my point, even though he's been really, really up and down and all over the place. I mean, I know we're going to talk more about outside shooting. If you look at his like outside shooting last 10 games, last 7 games, last 5 games.
February is 39% from 3-point range. January, 26% from 3-point range.
But I mean,
December, 39. Pick a lane, Dennis Schroeder.
But forget just pick a lane for a month. The fluctuations in the way his percentages go just from separating it by a few games is all over the place. Like, and I think it's indicative of just sort of his overall, you know, his overall comfort level, his overall effectiveness with this team. But, you know, it starts.
Everybody wants to be Danny Green. They're all trying to literally channel last year's Danny Green.
I mean, look, there's the short-term effect in terms of how the Lakers get through this period without AD, but there's also bigger picture questions that are going to start getting addressed and bandied about within the front office, because starting today, when this podcast drops, the Lakers and Team Schroeder can start banging out an extension or start really getting into the largest possible offer. The beginning date was February 16th. Where Schroeder could actually get the maximum amount in an extension. And they have until the offseason begins to work this out.
Right. Without him becoming an unrestricted free agent.
Right. Information gathering period, I think, with Schroeder.
And ultimately, I mean, look, the Lakers are in a position where when you talk about are they going to re-sign Schroeder or not, you know, they can bring back Caruso, they can bring back Schroeder, they can bring back THT. It's just a matter. It all becomes a matter of how much luxury tax are you willing to pay. And I don't believe the Lakers are in a position where they have made all these moves, where they've brought in AD, where they've signed him, where they've signed up, locked up LeBron, and all that without the understanding. I realize no fans in the building, and it impacts their bottom line. I feel like they are fully prepared to pay a massive luxury tax bill. They just are, and I'd be shocked if. I mean, they'll make, you know, moves at the margins. They're not going to pick up maybe the 13th guy on the bench next year if it means an extra million and 2 million that costs them 8 because of the way the luxury taxes is calculated. Okay, maybe there you start to trim. But if you feel like you need to bring back Schroeder, you're going to bring back Schroeder because they can't replace him. But I think to your point, Andy, you are going to learn what he's capable of and what he brings that goes beyond that sort of role player, not quite all-star, but still very good. And I think this can be instructive for what they have in him going forward. Might make him a little more, a little less money, but I don't think it impacts whether or not they bring him back.
Oh, I think it does. I absolutely think it does.
I don't, because I just don't think they can replace him. Unless if he just flat out sucks.
It depends on what they think they have, like in THT, for example, you know, as potentially as a point guard in his place. Because right now, Schroeder, to be totally honest, doesn't look like anything more than just a sort of average or slightly below average starting point guard. I mean, I think
as a starting point guard, I might agree with you, but I think as a general NBA talent, I think he's better than that. And THT is not as good a player as Dennis Schroeder.
No, he's not as good a player, but if you had to prioritize one or the other, I think it's THT and it's not close.
I don't think you have to do that is my point.
I don't know if you have to, but you know, they may decide they want to. I mean, these economics, I always feel like teams maybe prepared to spend, maybe prepared to pay massive luxury tax bills. I think we sometimes overestimate, like the royal we, their willingness to go all the way. And we've seen before in the past where the Lakers, even when they were in a championship mode, still were not willing to spend every single nickel possible.
There weren't a lot of situations where they nickeled and dimed on the front line of the players. It was always towards the back end of the roster and the ice cream machine and the carving station with Shannon Brown.
Well, I guess what it really depends on is how, and this is really, I guess, what we'll learn, how far up the line you consider Schroeder. Because so far, and again, I don't mean this to say he's played badly because I don't think he has, but so far he has felt to me more like a nice addition to have than a true impact player. And that could be very pricey. That could be very pricey for that type of player.
And that's with all these guys that we're looking at. We'll take a look at that probably in the next show, just sort of how all of these new guys are performing. But it's so like the last thing with the
flip
AD
side,
stuff.
Just really quick, the flip side is, though, he's got a real opportunity to prove just how incredibly valuable he is. And look, the Lakers gave up a first round pick and they don't have a whole lot of them in order to bring him in. I do agree with you, Brian, that all things being equal, they'd like to retain him. And if I had to bet on what ends up happening, I think they will end up figuring out some type of extension. I just don't think it's automatic. That's all.
Fair enough. I mean, there are maximums, it is a hard thing to replace the talent with all of those guys. I'd be surprised if they weren't prepared to do it. Because they knew what was coming when they made all these deals. But anyway, we'll see. The last thing I want to get into before we move on here, when we talk about the AD fallout, they're going to play 9 games at least without Davis. Like flat out, everybody knows. What in these 9 games matters?
I feel like what matters most is the inability to get themselves back on track as the best version of themselves, Brian, because they have not been playing really well over like the last, I don't know, 5 to 10 games, and some of that has
gotten very gummy.
Right. And some of that's had to do with playing with either a diminished version of AD or without him at all. Alex Caruso missed a few games, the stuff like that matters. But in terms of trying to really rediscover form and even building upon what was a really good start, they may be able to hold serve better than we expect during this period without AD, and that's great. But they don't really get to build on the best version of themselves.
Right, because whether they win or lose games is something that's independent of...
Yes.
Are you building a rhythm and a chemistry that makes you better throughout the year where, it's a month where it's, as a team, and this is what I think is kind of crazy about this. As a team, what they do is hard to make heads or tails of because the offense, even if it works great, when Anthony Davis comes back, you're still going to make Anthony Davis a featured part of your offense. The defense looks bad when Davis is out, well, it's probably going to look less because he's their best defensive player, their most impactful defensive player by a fair amount when he's fully engaged. And so the good stuff is going to be different when Davis comes back. The bad stuff is going to be different when Davis comes back. And so you're right. It's hard to kind of build the quote unquote habits when one of your most important players isn't there.
There's an opportunity.
So you're right. Cost. Yeah, absolutely. The flip side of that is on an individual level, I think it matters. Like if Kuz goes out and crushes it for a month as a more featured player, that I think helps him in the playoffs, even when that role steps back for those moments where you need him to be better. If Schroeder, like we're talking about, really steps up into a role where he can take a little load off LeBron, where he's a scorer, where he's really grows into the role that he, I think, envisions for himself, that has an impact in the playoffs. So it's like, it's weird. You think of this as a team game, but I almost think, Andy, it's really more how these guys perform individually. THT, Kuz, Schroeder, Harrell, that matters more.
Yeah. I think Frank Vogel, if nothing else, is going to get a real, he's going to get a real opportunity to just see what some of these guys can bring to the table and how many different ways he can use them. I think especially some of the newer guys. And look, for a guy, even for a guy like Markieff Morris, who proved himself really, really valuable in the playoffs, but thus far has been very, very underwhelming. You know, it's an opportunity to remind the staff why they put a priority on bringing him back in the first place. You know, there are a lot of different guys on this team. You know, Marc Gasol. Like, look, without AD, if nothing else, there's going to be a premium on getting other guys better shots. Marc Gasol so far has not even been the facilitator that they hoped they would be in terms of
impact. Not often enough. And you talk about that, he's going to have to take more shots too.
Right, yes. I mean, look, he is still an incredibly good passer. I'm not saying the ability slipped off. I'm just saying he hasn't been impactful that way on a regular basis as I know you and I envisioned, and I think the team had hoped. It's really critical that he finds a way to start doing that now, because you can't put it all on LeBron.
Yeah, because, I mean, those things will have a fallout. If they spend nine, I don't care how not tired LeBron says he always is, if you spend the next month just leaning on him to try to win games, you know, 37, 38, 39 minutes a night of real minutes. Like, I'm talking like hard minutes, not the 34, 33, like, you know, nights where he might've been earlier in the season where, yeah, he was on the floor, but he wasn't always working that hard. It will take something out of him. And if it's 3%, if it's 5% of something that he's got juice at the end of the year, you know, you need that 3 or 4 or 5% of LeBron James to win another title.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like that could be, that little margin could be the difference between winning a title and not.
Especially when he's got roughly a billion miles on his odometer at this point.
It is a real thing. It's going to be interesting to see what happens and trying to filter out what matters and what doesn't ultimately in this time without AD on the floor. Want to get into the outside shooting here, but before we do that, Andy, want to give a brief moment to talk about our newest sponsor, eBay. Whether you're into rare dead stock or the latest release, find the exact shoe you are looking for. eBay is a fantastic place to look for sneakers. I sometimes browse there, even though can't always pull the trigger, but I love looking at the stuff. As the original sneaker marketplace, eBay is the place to go to cop the pair you've been eyeing. eBay's authenticity guarantee, it means your sneakers are meticulously inspected by independent professional authenticators, a team of experienced sneaker authenticators. They verify the box, the logo, the stitching, dozens of other inspection points. Each sneaker also receives an authenticity guarantee tag that includes a digital stamp of authenticity, and it protects sellers with a verified return process. And for sneaker sellers out there, eBay has eliminated selling fees on sneakers over $100, making it free to sell or flip your collection. Go to ebay.com/sneakers today. eBay, the world's best destination for discovering great value and unique selection. If I were rich, Andy, God, I'd be buying so many sneakers. I'd love shoes.
You buy too many, you're poor.
Shoes, watches,
booze. Yeah.
But definitely shoes and watches.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So the Lakers, as we've been mentioning, we've hinted at this. We've talked around it a little bit, Andy. They can't hit anything from 3-point range. They are god awful right now.
Yeah. They're a shade under 36% for the season, but it has been slipping. The last 10 games, they're shooting 30% as a team, 29th in the league. Last 15 games, 32.5. The Lakers have played 28 games. They're 21-7 right now. So that means after a really scorching start, the second half of the season thus far, they've really come down to earth.
It is it's disturbing, and it's really hard. It's also hard to watch. I mean, when teams miss shot after shot after shot after shot, it's unpleasant, and it's unpleasant for me to watch, which makes me wonder, it can't be that pleasant to play in either. They are at a point. Remember, you know, we had Krantzis McBasketball, Tim from the Lakers Exceptionalism Pod, on it. We talked about that, like, how sustainable is this? And he said, you know, basically he said, look, they're going to get open shots. Like, they're going to continue to get open shots. And in theory, they ought to be able to keep making them. And they just haven't. And so, you know, Vogel was asked about this last week and basically copped to it. Like, yeah, we kind of came down to earth a little bit. You coaches normally will say, you know, yeah, we're getting the looks we want. You know, the shots will go down. They very rarely cop to, yeah, we're kind of, you know, this is a little bit of water seeking its own level. I don't think their level, I don't think he thinks their level is 30% or 29% or 28%. But, you know, he admitted KCP was overshooting his career percentages and Caruso overshooting their career percentages. The question then becomes, Andy, where do they level out? Because they weren't great last year until the playoffs, and they did just fine, if memory serves.
Yeah. Ultimately. I mean, they did, but you don't want to count on that. I mean, particularly in a league that really is predicated on three-point shooting, and most teams are reasonably proficient at it. I mean, you don't want to make your job that much harder. And, you know, the last 10 games, some of this may have to do with his hand, but, you know, you mentioned Caruso. He's shooting 20% from behind the arc.
That's bad.
Yeah.
It's very bad.
You know, we mentioned KCP has been in a really bad slump that it looks like is affecting his confidence. Marc Gasol has been shooting 29% over the last 10, but he doesn't take
enough. He shoots two a week. Who cares? Right.
He doesn't take enough to begin with. Like, you know, there will be games where he makes, you know, two threes, which, you know, in and of itself, all right, nice contribution, but it stands out more. It's like, oh my God, he actually took. Taking too, you know, Schroeder, like I mentioned, his percentages are all over the damn place. Over the last 10 games, he's 31.5 on the season, but over the last 10 games, just under 36%. You go to the last 7 games, almost 39, but you go to the last 5, he's at 26.7. So it just,
again, pick a lane, Dennis.
Well, but I mean, but that's one of your primary offensive options who isn't LeBron or AD.
Right. And to be fair, three-point shooting, very few even good three-point shooters are, you know, 3 for 7 every game. You
know, no, you know, absolutely.
But, you know, you do want a certain degree of consistency here, right, if you can find it.
Kuzma, over the last 10, he's shooting just 33%, rounding down a bit. And I mentioned this before, Brian, but I think it's fallen under the radar. LeBron, over the last 10 games, just under 33%. You know, like, LeBron for a while was this team's best three-point shooter by, you know, in terms of if you combine volume with efficiency, he was their best by an incredibly wide margin.
Yeah, it's one of these things where, and you touched on it, the Lakers got by last year. They were not a good free throw shooting team. Fair enough. They were not a good 3-point shooting team. Okay. But they were, you know, tremendous in transition. They generated a lot of offense from their defense and all of these other things. And they obviously made it work. But the thing was, they weren't that in the bubble. When they got to the playoffs, suddenly KCP was hitting everything and Markieff Morris was hitting everything. And you can't, like you say, rely on that. If there's some, I'm not worried about the defense. So there's been a lot of hand-wringing about the defense because it looks so much different. Stuff we've talked about on the show, they give up more points at the rim than they did last year, more points at the paint, certainly. And the rim protection, to the extent that it's there, and it's been pretty good, at least depending on how you want to measure it. But the overall defense looks different. They're going to win differently than they did last year. And even though they are still statistically an outstanding defense, the best in the league, there's been a lot of hand-wringing over the aesthetics of it. Much less hand-wringing over the offense because it got off to such a good start. And, you know, almost like, you know, remember when we decided the point guard who's not even in the league anymore was better than D'Angelo Russell, the guy who got, God, I can't even remember his name.
Emmanuel Mudiay.
Emmanuel Mudiay. Is he in the league? He plays for someone, doesn't he?
I think he's in the league.
But like, okay. But remember like how long it took for people to realize, no, Russell might be having a better season. Like the Lakers offense was established as really good and the defense was worrisome at the beginning of the year. And the reality has been, I think for me, at least watching these games, I am much more worried long-term about the offense because they're, again, becoming a pretty mediocre free throw shooting team. And they are, again, becoming a pretty mediocre three-point shooting team. And, oh, by the way, they still turn the ball over a ton. And it's really hard to be a good offense when you do all of those things.
Yeah. These, especially to this period without LeBron. I mean, like I've said this many times, when LeBron's gone on these crazy rolls shooting threes, it's awesome. And it's just yet another thing that makes trying to stop that dude that much harder. But in a perfect world, you want LeBron having the floor spaced for him, not LeBron spacing the floor for everybody else.
Right.
So especially during this period where you don't have AD, it is imperative that these other guys start hitting shots, because then otherwise you really are in a place where LeBron just becomes, I mean, a true one-man band. Like at this point, whatever arenas they're playing in that actually have fans, he's going to be out there selling hot dogs and shit. Like, I mean,
he's playing like 17 instruments with his feet, yeah, and another four with his arms and his guitar, like, and a harmonica and all that.
Exactly. I mean, like, these other guys have to hit shots for everything to be functional. A, because LeBron's in a bit of a slump himself, but B, just it won't work otherwise. Like, I mean, you're just going to have four or five bodies going right at LeBron on every play. And if these other guys are missing the same wide open shots that haven't been falling during these periods, it's going to get brutal for the Lakers. And I don't even mean it in terms, like we said, neither one of us is that concerned about the wins and the losses during this period. No. I'm just talking about the toll on LeBron.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't, if they went 0-9, they're going to make the playoffs. It's going to be fine. I think the way Utah is playing, I don't know what the league looks like in June and July in terms of how many fans are going to be allowed in the building. Just, you know, the fact you got to go up and play in Utah makes a difference. Like, home court could matter more this year. Playing in Denver could matter more, obviously, than playing, being the quote unquote home team in Orlando. But you still don't sacrifice, your ability to be healthy, your ability to have, the right amount of energy and all that stuff. Like that stuff, you don't sacrifice any of that to win games in February while Anthony Davis is out. You just don't. I mean, I assume you don't disagree.
No, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, look, assuming everybody is healthy down the stretch, the Lakers are going to be the elite contending team, the favorite to repeat, all of that I think they still are. I mean, we've seen what they look like at their best. I think they're capable of getting back there. And that team is going to be capable of beating anybody in the playoffs, which is what matters most. But this stuff adds up.
Yeah, absolutely. I was just saying, the shooting more broadly, you know, what they are as a team is basically unbeatable if they're somewhere near what they were at the beginning of the year, just that proficient. But as people have pointed out, it was, I think on the late night happy hour, Nikias Duncan pointed out, like, Kyle Kuzma at 38% is a transformative player on your team. Kuz at 33% or 32% still can bring a lot with the energy, right, the rebounding, the shot blocking, the defense and all that, but he's not the same guy. And so all these things are going to matter in the long term. And if you're looking for something, like, just like I said, can't count on everything that happened last year happening this year. Before we go, news breaking on Monday that Blake Griffin and the Pistons are sort of amicably exploring a trade or a buyout or some kind of combination of something. And he's not going to play for the Pistons until they figure this out. I'm not surprised necessarily. At some point this season, something like this was going to happen. I'm sure they've been looking to trade him for a little while. The bigger thing is, I don't know where he goes. It's going to be almost impossible to trade. They'll have to probably come up with some sort of buyout. And ultimately, it's a bummer to see Griffin at almost 32 to really be in a position where it seems like he just can't do it really anymore. Not at any meaningful level.
Yeah, I mean, or not on a regular basis, if nothing else. I mean, there will still be flashes where he looks not like the dunk on everybody version of Blake Griffin, the guy who was the face of Lob City. Just because, no, I mean,
but still a pretty good player.
Right. I mean, that doesn't exist anymore. I saw somewhere, I don't think he's actually dunked since 2019. Like, it's actually been that long.
Neither have I.
Well, I guess stars are just like us. But I mean, both of us like Blake on a personal level to the degree that we either covered him with the Clippers or I worked on him.
Been around him a little bit.
Yeah, I've worked with him on a couple projects outside of, you know, our work with 710 or with The Athletic. He's a good dude, but also too, like, he's a really, really talented guy, like a truly talented basketball player who I think these injuries have ended up just overshadowing just how much he just reconfigured his game. Like, yeah, he went from being this guy that was considered all athleticism and hops and explosiveness and no real refined skills. I mean, I don't think that was actually true, but that was the way he was seen, to this guy who developed this really great all-around offensive game. He developed an outside shot. He's become a really, really good passer. He's somebody that you can actually have run sets as opposed to looking just to set him up to dunk on everybody.
No, you put him in they at his best, you know, whether it was the Clippers at the end of this sort of space or the Pistons when he was there, used him in the same way the teams use Marc Gasol in the high post as a facilitator.
Yeah, and it sucks to see the work and redesigning of himself that Blake Griffin has done not really be able to fully manifest itself. Like, he reminds me a lot of Grant Hill in terms of the what if guys. I mean, he's fortunate enough to have had, you know, a big enough sample size and enough success that you don't look at him in the same way as like a Brandon Roy, or certainly not like a Greg Oden.
No.
But there's a lot with Blake Griffin that feels, you know, unfortunately left on the table through no fault of his own. I mean, he began his career missing his first year due to injury.
Yeah.
And since then, he's never really been able to escape that. If he's bought out, Brian, you know, you've already seen on Twitter people, you know, come on, do it, Pelinka, do it, you know, bring him in.
Sure. I mean, I don't know how he fits. But I mean, what I think you hope for if you're the Lakers is sort of a Nick Batum kind of impact.
Exactly what I was going to say.
Where you take Griffin, you put him you surround him with really good players, put him in a situation where he doesn't have to be great, you know, where everything he gives you is kind of gravy. To me, he becomes like a guy that you maybe upgrade over Morris in certain situations. You can, you know, just he provides you options. If you pick him up, he obviously knows what the deal is going to be. You know, look, Blake, you might play a lot, you might not play much at all, but you could go win a ring. LA loves you. Yeah,
I feel like he would be a great, great second unit wheel greaser.
Yeah, like, I don't. There's no downside. Like, if it means you got mechanically, I have zero idea how you make this work. You know, a lot of it would depend on timing, and you know, the Lakers are hard capped, and how you have to move things around, and you'd have to release Quinn Cook and probably some other people before they're guaranteed, which comes later this month. It happens. I don't think any of this is going to happen fast enough for this to work for the Lakers. But then again, this all involves a lot of math, and I'm not good at any of that.
Well, I mean, they may, depending on what's going on with AD, it wouldn't be shocking if maybe they made that type of move preemptively anyway, just right, to give themselves the most optionality.
But they can't trade for Griffin.
No, absolutely not.
And they'd be insane to do it. But if you're just asking, would I like Griffin on the Lakers? Sure.
Yeah.
Like, there's zero downside to it. You know, but to your point, Andy, just, I mean, people may not realize it. Like, I think it was 2013, 2014 was the year that he was an MVP candidate. He averaged 24 points a game, 9.5 rebounds, 53% shooting, 4 assists and all that stuff. He took that season 0.6 of a 3-pointer game. His last full season was 2018, 2019, where he played 75 games. He averaged 24.5 points. Seven and a half rebounds, over 5.5, almost 5.5 assists per game, taking 7 3-pointers a game. completely transformed his game from the, you know, rim attacking, whatever, to, you know, inside out to outside in. That is not easy to do.
No.
And he did it, you know, in part to be able to accommodate what his body couldn't do for him anymore. And I was just, I was hoping he could squeeze out one more good season this year. And it got off to a good start. Mm-hmm. And then it's just sort of fallen off.
It just sucks to see. I mean, that season you mentioned, I just looked it up. He finished third in MVP voting.
Yeah, I thought that I had the right year there.
Yeah, he was behind Durant, who I believe won that year, and LeBron, or vice versa. But anyway, those are the two guys ahead of him. And then it was Blake. And again, it sucks to see. And both of us hope that this situation resolves itself in a way where Blake can land in a good situation and, you know, maybe show off a little bit of what he can still do.
All right. So that will be something that's sort of a long-term story. Some other guys popping up with the buyout market will be something that certainly Lakers fans are looking at, and we will follow, as February gets going and into March and in the trade deadline and all that good stuff. But yeah, the, hopefully relatively brief no AD era begins Tuesday in Minnesota, and some good games against good players that the Lakers will play over the course of these nine games that they'll play without Anthony Davis until after the All-Star break. So plenty to talk about as this happens, and we'll do it again thanks to the folks over at eBay. Get yourself some sneakers there, some authentic kicks, as the someone might say. I would say that I don't think the kids actually call them those anymore. But online.ag.
I feel like you've said enough. Keep going.
BetOnline.ag and the thank you again to the delicious pizza. They don't call them authentic kicks anymore, Andy. Did I just sound like an old guy?
Move forward, Brian. Say goodbye.
20% off when you use Cam Brothers. Two locations, delicious pizza. We'll see everybody next time.